Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen. And we are the podcast attempting to reclaim our social narrative, pulling it back from the precipice of politics and economics, which define so much of the conversation happening in the public square, but which do precious little to lift up avenues for human flourishing. And we believe if we can change the dialogue, we can change hearts and minds and potentially change trajectory. We invite all of our listeners aboard that journey with us.
The lenses that we support and promote and practice in order to get deeper and see more clearly into our shared common life are the lenses of moral philosophy and theology. We believe those lenses help us see in ways that the default lenses of politics and economics do not allow us to see.
You know what, Chris? We've been doing this show now for how long? Like, this is our fourth season. I'm beyond believing that. Like, I actually have evidence and experience that tells me that that is true.
Yeah, and that's part of our mission, is to help other people see. It really is about seeing, that metaphor of lenses and seeing. And it's tricky because we're so saturated in the political, in the ways that media covers our shared common life, is to focus on the political and the economic. We're so saturated in it that we can barely see it. But when we call ourselves to consciousness, then we are better able to be aware of how much we are saturated in that way of seeing.
Yeah, when we get to set the frame, right? Because public media and social media define so much of the parameters of the conversation that they wind up defining the conversation itself, which means the broader conversation, which is the place where we might have, you know, commonalities, is not one that we get to. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, Chris, but I honestly believe it is by design, because I feel like, you know, the 1% that's out there cleaning up, whose lives are ducky, whose wealth increased by 900% over the same period of time that yours and I may have increased 12 if we were lucky. Maybe we didn't lose ground if we were lucky, but the vast majority of us lost ground while the uber wealthy increased their wealth by 900%. Have everything to gain by keeping the frame exactly the way it is. Because as long as we all are down here slugging it out with one another, as long as time and energy is being wasted on, you know, when trans students can use what bathrooms, we'll never get, you know, we'll never look up long enough to go, hey, wait a minute, that actually isn't the bigger issue. I mean, we may have different opinions on that, but it is not the thing that is most greatly impacting human life.
It sounds like we're doing our show, but actually this is still the introduction.
we get caught up in this question all the time. We're fascinated at why we do this.
I'm always glad to talk about this, because I think it's just crucial, and we can sometimes glide past it. But it's really the foundation of this work that we're doing, here's another way to put it, to see the frame rather than to see through it. Thank you. We'll just proceed from there. So, Shayna, I think it's your turn to spin the spinny wheel. Our spinny wheel is a device, a very high-tech device that we use to begin each show. We give that thing a spin. It has a pointer, and the pointer lands on one of 16 core values and key ideas, and it gives us a moment to do a little spontaneous improv riff on one of our core values and key ideas. Shayna, give that thing a spin.
Give our non-totalitarian wheel. Okay, here we go.
The spinny wheel has landed on be curious, Shayna. Be curious is one of our core values. And of course, the spinny wheel, relating back to how we started this conversation in my mind as we went a little deep into the purpose of our show, a pillar of this seeing differently is curiosity. It's questioning It's questioning things that are assumed to just be so. So we want to question, part of our curiosity is questioning those assumptions.
Yeah, I think half the time the assumption is unconscious too. I mean, you've talked so often about, you know, culture being defined as patterns of thought and habits of behavior. And those habits and patterns are not chosen, right? We're born into an already always listening. We're born into a narrative, and it's just the way it is, right? If it, in some ways, a holy curiosity is the alpha and the omega. It is, without it, there is no questioning. There is no looking for anything or wondering about. So we're just like, you know, those little rats on a wheel, and we're running, and we're not getting anywhere. You know, you have to stop periodically, get off the wheel and go, why the hell am I doing this? I mean, you know, if I'm doing it because I need a little exercise, that's one thing. But if I'm just on this wheel running endlessly because I never stop to wonder if I could do something else, you know, that's unfortunate. But that is how a lot of people spend their lives. You know, they get into the grind and they are just ground to dust over time and never wonder if it could be any different. And now for something completely different.
That sound is a signal that we are moving from our riff on the spinny wheel to the content of today's show. Today's show is the conclusion, the wrap-up, the retrospective on four different shows that you can go back and listen to, and we hope that you would go back and listen to. If you haven't, if you've been following along, you have heard Leif Seligman, who is a professor at Keene State College in New Hampshire. And then we talked to two of her students, who she calls co-learners, Bryn Mulligan and Ella Sirois. And also as part of these conversations, we also talked to a young student at Southern New Hampshire University, Lynn Mai.
The conversation that we had with Leif started around a theme we've been working on, around this sort of sense of emptiness and meaninglessness that seems to be permeating so much of American life and culture. And Leif started talking about some of the experiences that she had had with some of her students. And Chris and I immediately got curious about that. And so Chris found these three young adults to interview. That's the going deep part. And now we're going to shine some light by inviting all of you, or we have in these last three shows, invited you in to listen to the insights of these three young adults, which I thought, Chris, were just so eye-opening. They just sounded like three really outstanding young people who I would love to sit down and have more extended conversation with. Yeah, so this is the wrap-up on that series.
I just echo and repeat how, oh, it was refreshing, it was invigorating, it was fun to talk to these three young people. Where do you want to start?
Well, I had a couple of thoughts. One was that I came away from these three interviews with, I think, a deeper appreciation for the fact that it's now a working hypothesis of mine that young Americans, young adults in this culture actually comprise a marginalized group. They are marginalized because we're putting them into this wheel, you know, driving them towards college, right? And driving them into debt, without a whole lot of hope on the other side of this thing. And we're working them into the ground for the most part. I mean, we're just, you know, the number of times I heard these guys talk about, you know, just like on the weekends, and, you know, people aren't doing anything because they're just, you know, home watching TikTok, or the back in the dorm watching TikTok and doing schoolwork. It does not sound at all like my college experience. But things were much slower then, and we didn't have social media, and we didn't have email, and we didn't have, you know, all of that, which I think has just brought a radical overload of work and expectation into a system that really can't shoulder it. That's crushing the human soul. So that was one thing. And the other thing that I'll just throw out here for you to, for you to bounce off of was how I was really wowed and mesmerized by how different Lynn's perspective was as, as an international student. And her experience, her ability, because she came from Vietnam and settled in America, doesn't have her citizenship, but I think seems to feel more American, but still identifies as an international student. But she can border cross, right? And she does. She has, domestic student friends and international student friends, and so she was able to really shine a light on differing perspectives, and I found that absolutely fascinating. What jumped out for you?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about both of those things that you've named, Shana, but circling back to the first, I was struck by how both Bryn and Ella described each in their turn a depression and anxiety. And I thought their descriptions were so concrete and helpful, just helpful to me, and evocative. So Bryn talked about her depression, and again, just with openness that I was so grateful for, she talked about depression as not sadness or not feeling depressed, but emptiness. That was the word she used. And her metaphor was feeling like a shell. So to me, those are powerful metaphors, powerful ways of talking about depression. Let me just say then to Ella, when she was talking about anxiety, she talked about constant fatigue. Her metaphor was tiredness and being drained. And I just wanted to lift those up because, we can talk at a kind of just a more abstract level of depression and anxiety. But I just loved how both of those young women were able to articulate what that feels like. So I lift that up and see what rejoinder you might have to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought they were spot on. Like, that is what it feels like. So I was resonating with that. I was also really struck by Bryn's reflections on TikTok and social media and on how you're seeing something horrible one minute, something really cute the next minute, and then you guys had a conversation about never having time to process.
Right.
So when you don't have time to process, you wind up stuffing the feeling. We know in the realm of treating trauma in first responders that's what used to happen, right? We didn't do critical incident stress management. People had a bad day, they drank about it. If the alcohol stopped working, they found something more exotic to take the edge off. And lo, surprise, surprise, that wasn't a winning strategy. But why was it happening? Because they were being exposed to this shit and never having an opportunity to process it. Well, the way our culture is set up now, between the barrage of truly horrific news on the television that comes at us, just unendingly, and what comes at us in streaming, and I think she used the incident of the shooting at, was it Michigan State? And how, kids the next day were jumpy. I mean, kids at Keene State, were jumpy. It's happened at Michigan State. She talked about, oh my God, she talked about the one student she knows who was a survivor of Sandy Hook and is now at Michigan State. I mean, how does that kid begin to process? Is there anybody there to say, walk into that really hard place with me? And, when I think about theologically, when I think about, the church, when it's working well, pastoral care, when it's working well, means somebody gets into the river of shit with us. And when you're there, man, it is really sweet to have somebody just come in and sit with you, not try to fix it, not try to make it better, just shut up and sit down with me. When I'm ready, I'll get out and we can get out together. But that takes time. So, yeah, I thought they just, they named some stuff that I knew, but dimly, you know, like trees. This was sort of like the second spit in the eye, and suddenly, you know, my eyes were opened, and I was like, oh, wow, that is absolutely it.
I want to circle back to the social media observations that they made and that you have made. But before that, let's talk about Lynn a little bit, because you raised her comments and her perspectives in your opener there, Shayna. And
Chris, did you notice that Lynn was the only one for whom a historical perspective was part of her frame, right? It's part of her view.
I did notice that, and I do want to get to that too, because it is connected to what I want to say, which is the one thing that she said that struck me, and I will tie this back to history and time in a second, but the one thing she said that struck me the most is, speaking of her family having come from Vietnam 10 years ago and other international students that she knows, she said, "We are here because we have a purpose." And I had intuited that in preparation for the conversation. If you have committed yourself to the kind of life change that her family committed to come here, to come to the United States from Vietnam, you're already saying, I have a vision of the future, it's hopeful, and I'm going to act towards realizing it, realizing this vision of the future. And so there's a built-in hope to that. I mean, hope is the ground on which you would make a move like that. So the connection to historical, the connection I make is through time. And if you think you have a future, you're already connected. You're connecting yourself to a story that you can imagine in the future. And that's in contrast to hopelessness and the anxiety and the depression, where you say, there is no future. I mean, that's the starkest way that gets characterized. We don't have a future. So to me, that's a pointed and powerful and potent kind of contrast between thinking, yes, I've got a future, and no, we don't have a future. My wondering is the immigrant story, just by its nature, the way I've just described it, is it more connected to a sense of past, present, and future, and therefore to hope, because that's I have a future. Hope equals I have a future, or we have a future. Is the immigrant story just more naturally connected to history and hope?
And, you know, to be clear, we need to which immigrants? Because obviously this is a very successful story of people coming from a foreign land, and right now our southern border is overflowing with people who are having a very different experience.
But even they're there because they have a history and they envision a future. Like, they've made a decision. I'm not saying they're having a good time, but they're connected to some kind of, even if it's I've got to escape because my life is in threat in Colombia or wherever. There's a sense of the past that is driving them to act.
Yeah, and I guess I would have to talk to some people who have done that journey. Like, I just wouldn't want to presuppose what that experience is, because with Lynn's family, her mother made a decision. They chose to leave Vietnam and come to America so mom could pursue her education, which is different from being run out of your country or having to leave or having to flee. Those are two different leaving experiences. And so I don't know how that shapes. I'd have to give it some thought. Obviously, my ancestors were, you know, running out of Poland and running out of Russia to avoid persecution. The other theological piece that really emerged for me from both Bryn and from Ella was they're talking about Leif and Leif's class. And I thought to myself, you know, yeah, Leif is an adjunct professor at Keene State. Leif is also an itinerant minister, unbound or fettered by denomination. So of course it makes sense that Leif's class would feel like church, even though none of those kids would ever name that. And again, I don't say that's what most churches feel like. I say, boy, I wish, you know, if I find a church that feels like that, that will be my church. A place where I'm seen, a place where, you know, if I'm having an off day, someone's willing to just simply, again, get in the river of shit with me, right? We don't have to fix this. You don't have to, you need a day off, you need a day off. Well, let's everybody just send light and love and, you know, go forth and find some rest and joy. Do what you need to do to take care of yourself. You know, it was fascinating to me to hear, you know, particularly Bryn, when she talked about Leif, she just absolutely lit up. And, you know, it's the glass of cold water to one who's been in the desert too long. You know it when you see it. And so I thought that was interesting. And in terms of looking at, as you and I ask these questions all the time, you know, how do we create the kind of intentional communities wherein we can resist that headlong, mindless and blind tumble into culture? And I think they shined a light on some components. One, you know, a historical context, so a story that you can bind yourself to, that you can go back to over and over again, that makes sense to you. Some sort of narrative. And it doesn't even have to be agreed upon with, like, the community can have a number of different narratives in it. That's fine. But a narrative, you know, something bigger to tie yourself to that helps you have that you know, the longer historical lens, and also people in the community who accept you where you are and who really see you and give you space to say what's on your heart and mind, to be fully, wholly, and authentically present, yeah, are, you know, certainly, clearly antidotes to this empty and meaningless stuff.
I'm resonating with time and the past and narrative and those things that you've raised today in reflecting on Bryn and Lynn and Ella. And I'm drawn back to social media and the way that Bryn characterized the scrolling through TikTok, things that you mentioned earlier when you were talking about just the one thing after a next and the playing on emotions and the short, what is it? It moves so quickly that there's no room for reflection, for meaning making. And so my connection there is there's no past. Like, there's no narrative. So you can think of it in different ways. There's no narrative to connect to. And so you just have these discrete experiences that pile up. Or another way to say the same thing to me is there's no past, because there's no social. I guess I'm putting forward the provocative hypothesis that social media destroys a sense of history, or social media destroys the past, or social media destroys our ability to make meaning, which is history.
It flattens out a lot of things. It makes them flat because of the rate that it moves at. So we don't ever get to go deep on anything. We're just skimming across the surface of it. And so when we get to the end, we are sort of programmed to see things but not really feel them. And we're aware that we're not feeling them, or we're aware that we should feel them. But we don't know why we don't feel. Why do I feel empty? Why am I so exhausted?
My intuitive feeling of what the upshot is of that is that it then prevents us from being able to think as a society about different possibilities for our future. And that worries me in terms of where our democracy is heading. So that to me is the connection to, or a connection to, our shared common life. That is, if I say it's pre-political, it's about how we can think together as a self-governing people. And if our ability to think together is reduced, bad things will happen. Well, guess what? Bad things already have happened.
It's reduced, yeah. I'm just increasingly stunned. I do watch a lot of news, and just seeing, like, over the last 10 or 15 years, the people who are interviewed, who can barely string three sentences together, who have no capacity to reflect deeply on what the hell just happened to them. You know, those people are so frequently who gets interviewed, and maybe I'm just watching too much local news, and that's just life up here in New Hampshire. But to string an argument together, or to be able to follow a train from point A to point B, do you even hear yourselves? Like, this is where we are. I mean, I hate to sound like an intellectual snob, but we're dealing with a bunch of mental midgets, and I don't know how you function in a democracy, you know, with that, much less the people who are so insidious that they are lying and they know they're lying, and they go out there and say it anyway because they got to keep their ratings up. Anyway, I thought the whole thing was incredible. I was very, very, very happy that we got a chance to get insight into this particular group of individuals. But I have to say, it's got me really hungry to do more.
You know, Shana, not to get off onto a whole other ball game, but you can respond to this. As I was listening to Bryn and Ella and Lynn, I thought of your sermon, Maladjusted, and Martin Luther King Jr., and just how I think when we think of mental health issues, we tend to individualize and pathologize the individual. And in this instance, or not just in this instance, but I think we would do well as a society to flip the script, that the maladjusted ones are pointing us to the truth that there's a whole way of being in our shared common life that is, there's where the sickness is, and to be maladjusted to that sickness is a sign of health.
Yeah, amen. Fade to black. I mean, if you're not maladjusted to this, you're not paying attention. You're, you know, come on. And I think even, you know, a couple of weeks ago when we did the show on neoliberal capitalism, seen through the lens of people who are doing, you know, social mental health care, and they were able to absolutely make the connections between what's going on culturally, politically, economically, and how that is impacting, not only impacting people's mental health, but then impacting how mental health care is delivered. So, you know, it is important to get off the wheel periodically and take the long view. And as long as we're getting caught up in these short bursts and never given time to process, and we don't go to church anymore, so we don't take the time out, so everything is just next, you know, here, blah, 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 blah. Then you've got an entire culture that is traumatized and can't respond anymore. They can't, all they can do is react.
Shall we leave it there?
I think we leave it there. Stay curious, Chris.
Go deep, Shana.
And shine light. We thank all of our listeners for tuning in today to What in God's Name. Our show is made possible due to our generous sponsors who give on Patreon. You can become one of those generous donors by going to Patreon, patreon.com, and look up What in God's Name. And we thank you in advance for whatever you can do to help us keep this show rolling. Keep the conversation rolling.
That is right. And you can sign up, you can stay in touch with developments in our project by signing up for our newsletter at our website. Our website is whatingods.com, which is, Shana,
W-H-A-T-I-N-G-O-D-S.
Shana, I love talking to you. Thank you so much. What a fun time to be with you today.
Always, Chris. Have a blessed day. We'll talk to you soon.